Hello and welcome to Top of Mind Florida. I'm Michael Williams, all things AI today.
And I'm Brian Crowley. All things AI? You bet. Am I real or am I AI?
Well, we have just the man to answer that question for you today. Alan Crowitz, president and CEO of InfoStream, a guest of mine for many years in my former job at WPTV on our To The Point broadcast. And I remember a few years ago, he's like, we have got to start talking about AI. And ever since, it's been exploding everywhere. We appreciate you being with us, Alan.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Thanks so much. And matter of fact, it's advanced so much, all three of us, as Brian said, are AI. We can reveal it now. And people are saying, I want my money back. But Alan, AI, frame it a little bit for us. We talk AI, and there's the hope, the hype, the reality, the promise. The promise is broken. Place set for us a little bit. Where are we in this AI world right now? Yeah, Give us the big picture first.
Well, big picture. I mean, when's the last time you've seen anything this world-changing coming up on the radar? I mean, who's not talking about this, from business leaders to world leaders to the person in the grocery store that's not genuinely either panicking or thrilled or... I mean, just being aware of this, I've never seen so much attention given to a topic in my lifetime.
So what are you saying to people as you kind of break it down? First, for those of you listening and watching, what's it going to mean to me personally, or me personally at home, or for my business? Begin to help us kind of separate a promise from hype, and what's it going to mean to all of us, first of all, as you start trying to help us into this brave new world?
Yeah, well, I got to be a little biased in this potentially. So I will say nobody knows 100% for sure. I'm more biased towards the side is I personally think this is pretty major world revolutionary stuff. I'm going to put my aluminum hat on right now and sound like everybody out there.
Brian and I did not bring ours.
Yeah, I should have brought it, so my tinfoil hat. But I really see this as I was in there in the early days of IT, you know, back in the old DOS computer screens where people were like blown away. Oh, I can type this command and get this prompt, and this is the future. And if anybody looked at that now, we were basically with sticks and stones working in a field with a loincloth on. Compared to the internet and GUI interfaces that they call it, you know, that we have now with computers and things like that. That's what I see now times 1,000 with AI. Everybody's losing their mind over what it can do and what we see in this exponential curve of growth that we see with it. And to me, it's the baby days. It reminds me of pre-DOS with computers. You know, if it's like this now, in 5 years from now, I foresee huge things. And it's not just me. I mean, we see world leaders, you know, changing the directions of entire companies. Hey, we have to invest trillions into this. You know, we have to encourage companies, educate, redirect education. We see business leaders. When have you ever seen so much investment in any one area in the industrial age? I would go so far as. When have you ever seen such a redirection in every business? I mean, this is, no matter what happens, something big is happening right now.
Well, how can, you know, is it good? Is it bad? Is it both?
Both. It's terrifying.
Talk about the good first, then the bad.
So the good is, I mean, this genuinely has a potential to be one of the biggest changes in, I know I sound like a crazy person. I'm going to keep saying that. It's literally, you know, we talked about, you know, the Iron Age and the Stone Age and the Industrial Age and the Information Age. I believe this could be the biggest of all of them, you know. This is something now that can bring more to us than all of human intellect relatively soon. You know, they talk about things like protein folding, you know, I don't want to get too fancy, but where it took them a full year to fold one protein that could maybe solve a virus or a medical issue.
Dread disease.
And yeah. Now they're doing like 100 million a year because of AI, you know, and they're saying at some point, you know, relatively soon, they might be able to solve any virus or any disease, you know, by telling the AI, just solve this protein folding to come up with an answer for something. We don't even know how it got there, but here, take this particular combination of chemicals and that goes away. You know, that one thing of a million different potential solutions out there can change the world, you know, and they're left and right. You know, we see, you know, AI with robotics. We see AI in, you know, healthcare. We see AI in industry and the things it's doing. There's a great quote by Elon Musk, whether you love him or hate him, you know, that he expects within a year, AI will be smarter than the smartest person on Earth. And then within one more year after that, it will be smarter than all the people of Earth combined, you know, wisdom. So then what happens? So my question with that is that can you be smarter than the teacher? So after that exponential growth, will it hit a plateau or will it somehow be able to learn what we can't teach it?
But I want to bring it a little bit out of the clouds in a moment. And you've begun to do that, but also what's it going to mean to me? We're starting to see its impact at home. But a lot of people argue, In fact, I read an article the other day. It said AI jobs apocalypse. It's overplayed, that companies are wondering if their investments are too much too soon for the promise of it. So how do we kind of bring it out of the clouds and say what's real, what's way over the horizon? And it won't be smarter than you, so don't
look, the easiest way to deal with AI, if it starts to become too much, you just unplug it.
oh boy. Alan's rushing to hire you and I as AI techs.
One of the big companies out there, I can't remember who it was, had an ad, we'll pay you $100,000 to stand by and be ready to pull the plug. It was a joke, but people were like, wow, okay.
He'll be the guy in the Star Trek episode who tries to unplug the ultimate computer episode, which, okay, I'm a geek.
I know which one you're talking about.
And it electrifies them. That'll be doing me. Yeah. Brian's like, I don't watch Star Trek, and you two are nerds. Yes. Bring it back to reality, though. You've talked kind of very big picture about world changing, but to Brian's point, bring that in bite sizes for me at home. You've talked a little bit about medicine for me at school, for my child or grandchild. Healthcare, talk a little bit more about.
Well, you bring up a great point. Money follows a lot of this stuff. If the money's not there, there can be all the talk in the world, all the grandeur plans in the world. But if there's not a return on investment, you know, that tends to stop things. And so you've got companies like OpenAI, the owners of ChatGPT, dumping ridiculous sums of money into AI and not making money yet. You know, and we see that with a lot of companies. So how long will that go on before, you know, it can turn into a real revenue model? And yet there's lots of companies who are getting a benefit out of that, whether it's reducing staffing or, you know, adding new services and benefits and do whatever. Another great one you mentioned is education. Very recently, Duolingo, the real popular app, which is known to be great with social media. They're great at getting messages out there that ring resonance, draw viral. The president of Duolingo made a comment about, hey, you know, pretty soon we don't think we'll have teachers, and we think that, you know, we're going to get rid of a lot of our staff. You know, we outsource all these experts to do our social media and to, you know, make the program. We're like, we're going to get rid of all of them. And we think at some point AI is going to be a better teacher than teachers. That went over like a lead brick, you know, and Duolingo is, for the first time in their entire history, getting major backlash that they're having a problem handling. So there is definitely a ceiling and multiple barriers that AI has to get through,
I had a teacher recently show me a review of a big meeting we had. I said, oh, it was really well done. He said, my AI did. He said, I recorded the entire meeting. AI spit out some I thought he'd written. At home, kids are using AI to help with homework. Teachers are trying to keep up with it in terms of learning lessons. How do I incorporate? I mean, these are real things that are happening right now. Yeah. Talk a little more about that.
Well, you know, I've always seen it in my history with IT is the ones we have to worry about is the younger kids. For example, when I do schools, you know, we build these elaborate security systems. We don't want the kids getting in and changing their grades or hacking the systems. We tend to find the teachers are struggling with the most basics on how to get the lesson plan up onto the projector. They're struggling with the technology in a lot of cases and whatever. The 12-year-old students are breaking into the grading system and, you know, and changing the, you know, pulling the paper. They're the ones who are on top of this stuff. They're the ones who know how to use it. They're the ones who are naturally thinking of the clever, creative uses and outside-the-box ideas to take advantage of AI. So they do bring a lot to the table. But again, where's the ceiling at? You know, writing a paper is wonderful. Summarizing a meeting is fantastic. Is that going to change the world? It helps, but that's not earth-shattering. So where is this exponential? Is the exponential growth going to continue this way? Is there a ceiling there? You know, what's going on with that?
Is there a practical problem? You know, the AI centers, if you will, need enormous energy. Is there enough enormous energy? I mean, they're talking about building smaller nuclear plants, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, is there going to be a cap where, and I will confess I'm in over my head on this, but I'm sort of like, you know, there's this idea that AI is going to take over the world and blah, 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 blah. But it all requires power. Do we have enough power? Can we do that successfully?
That's an excellent question. That is such a great question. So on the one hand, we have companies like NVIDIA and their genius. Elon Musk gets all the attention. There's another one out there, Jensen Huang with NVIDIA. You know, the guys, if you look at his LinkedIn resume, talk about an impressive guy. His last job was at Denny's, the restaurant. Next thing, he's, you know, in charge of this gajillion-dollar company, you know, that is like growing like this, ahead of the AI. He was way ahead of stuff. Yeah. Whatever he says, pay attention.
Sure.
He's five to 10 years out.
We were at that Denny's. They just skipped over Brian.
So, you know, his focus obviously is on like tokens or results to watts. So he's working hard at making the chips more efficiently. But at the same time, what was a computer became a rack of computers to run a program is becoming a data center to run a program.
So to Brian's point, is there going to be enough energy?
I don't know. They're running into problems with that. Like you mentioned, it is a real thing where they're talking about these micro nuclear plants to power them. Now, where we're hoping, and we've seen this throughout world history, where a new technology comes along to solve a problem. For example, you know, we're always the famous 30 years out, 20 years out from fusion. You know, and we're getting better and
nuclear
better
fusion,
and better,
yeah,
you know?
The eternal promise.
Yeah, and we're unlimited, you know, whatever energy. But this is a real ceiling. Will that be the ceiling? You know, will there be, you know, the chips hit a point?
So, give me just two examples of what you're seeing right now, how it's improving our daily lives. Just two examples.
In business, the creative ideas, you know, and along those lines, I personally, and I see it with all my clients and people we work with, weekly noticeable improvements in what it does. You know, the way,
as in,
I'll give you one example. It sounds trivial, but even your typical home user, business user, light user, when you ask a prompt about things, like, for example, this is a strange one I'm just going to mention. By the way, I gotta go on a little detour here. It's not just AI. The people using AI are one of the most exciting elements to me, because you can have this insanely intelligent, brilliant tool, but if you don't think to ask it the right thing, or what I can take advantage of it, the creativity part, the artistic part of it, you know, what good is this amazing thing? And the people out there, for example, this blew me away. All people starting now, it's very heavily used for therapy. People go, hey, today I had this problem at work with my boss, or I had this situation block. Can you help me with it? And it turns out, because it's following 4,000 psychologists and 4,000 psychiatrists and studies on behavior and leadership, it's got really good answers and interact. So now what they've added is, you know, 1 week from the next week, hey, now it's doing follow-up. So when you ask it any question, how to make a recipe, how to care for my lawn's got chinch bug, what do I do at that? It starts asking follow-up. Would you like a 3D map? Would you like a PDF handout? Can I make a little thing that you could laminate? You know, would you like, so on therapy, it will start following up. Would you like a daily plan? Would you like a list of some supplements that, you know, that maybe would help with your issue? So even that one little thing is upping the game for other people. Mm. But I do find it exciting, the creative ideas that people are using the AI for.
Does it cut the lawn yet?
I cannot wait for that.
Okay, good. But everything I'm hearing you say is that you're of the mind that mid and long term, it is impacting jobs. It impacts the teacher's job. It impacts the doctor's job, the lawyer's job, yeah, the finance. Duolingo. I mean, we've been kidding again. Brian's probably going to get up from the podcast in a moment if I make one more Star Trek reference, but I'll try.
I love Star Trek. Yeah. Come on.
I forgot my pick.
No, but he does love it. He also loves to bust my chops about it. But, you know, you think about things like universal translators. That was a staple of sci-fi. And now when artificial intelligence can quickly, just with an earbud, I can hear you in any language you speak, and in reverse, things like that. Translators. I have friends who do that for a living. Yeah. No work. I have friends who worry their finance jobs are going away. I have computer friends who worry those jobs are going away. Are you worried about that arc with AI?
Yes, and it's not my expertise, but I very much worry about the economies and what that means for the world. You know, I'm very much been trained in capitalism and free market economies and whatever, and this is shaking my foundation. I mean, this is one of my core beliefs, for lack of a better word, that is showing signs of being toppled.
So to Brian's great point, I love how you always boil it down. Do we go pull the plug before it's too late?
I don't know, you know, because look at history. There were protests when the blacksmiths put shoes, you know, on horses. You know, these cars, you know, we got to get rid of these things, you know. They're taking jobs, they're changing industries, blah, blah. The difference is, in the past, all the people who worked on horses, shoeing them, you know, maintaining them, but, you know, having stables and, what you know, sweeping the streets, whatever it was, they got redirected to the automobile, you know, whether it was putting tires on cars or running gas stations, it was a place to go. AI, there's not a place to go. It's the first time that I'm aware of jobs are being replaced and not an opportunity for people to move on to something else, you know? Now, I will add a caveat there. Jensen Huang, again, the president of NVIDIA, has said, you don't have to worry about AI taking your job. You have to worry about the person who knows how to use AI taking your job. Mm-hmm. His speech was, learn this. Because if they're going to get rid of 9 people in a 10-person department, they need one person to kind of, you know, oversee. And it's going to be the person who knows to do the jobs of 10 people using AI.
We've talked about that in our profession, Brian, media. AI might do a lot of the copy and all of that, and you might have one or two great story editors like you've been, and reporters, but so no profession is immune from this.
No, not at all, and even using your example, you know, the one person gets the job, but the other 9 are not getting a job. So do we wind up with massive unemployment? Where does the money, you know, our economy is also based on taxes and stuff like that. if you have massive unemployment because there are no jobs available, not because they're lazy, there's just no jobs because AI has taken over. What impact does that have on society? What impact does that have on government?
That is so interesting you said that. That is my concern. So here, as an AI expert who meets with businesses, who teaches on this, I've written a book, you know, for CEOs on AI. I've done all this stuff like that. What keeps me up at
night
is...
What's the book?
It's basically the AI for CEOs, how they can implement their organizations. You got to do it. You got to do it.
What keeps you up at night, as you're saying?
So what keeps me up at night is this economy thing, right? So things that are... the ghost in my closet are things like universal basic income. What do we do when the norm is not a temporary glitch in the economy or a redirection of resources, when 50%, 60% of the people, you know, aren't going to work potentially? Now, this may never happen. This could just be a ghost story.
Yeah.
But how do we, going back to when we traded seashells and rocks with each other, you know, and bartering, we've always worked a certain way. So what happens now when a large chunk of the people don't have to work anymore or don't, you know, we don't need them? How do we feed, you know, ourselves? How do we, you know, get money? How do we transact? And by the way, then what do you do for the people who do have to work? We still need, even then, we'll need some people.
And to your point, UBI has mentioned universal basic income has become a big debate point.
But where does that money come from?
Exactly.
If you have enormous unemployment.
And you're going to punish the 20% who are working by taxing them at 90% tax rate?
You know, it's an interesting dilemma. But I think some of the good news in this may be that people are talking about it now. All of the issues with AI, where, as you know better than I, you go back to the early days of the internet and social media stuff, there was less talk about controlling it, more talk just open the door wide open and let's go.
Yeah.
And now we look back and we go, maybe that wasn't such a great idea.
Agreed.
So do you feel like we're doing better with AI?
No.
We're going to crawl under the table now. Go find the plug, quick. Cut to Brian trying to get the plug out of the wall.
Sorry, I probably should be a little more politically correct there, but I don't think it's all doom and gloom as much as it is. The universal basic income, no one seems to be talking enough about that. That's me as an expert, my concern. As far as the threat to humanity, I think that's a real thing. But that's, believe it or not, to me, it's secondary. That's, people are a lot more worried about that. There's a lot more people paying attention to that. A lot of the AI companies are hiring ethics and people to monitor security. Yes, there's a lot of scary stories where AIs, you know, we just saw a story last week where they threatened to shut down, I think, Perplexity's AI, and the AI revealed an affair for somebody. Like, if you shut me down, I'm going to share that you're having an affair with someone in the office to everybody. You know, it's doing some pretty scary things. You know, if you pull the plug, I got a plan, you know, kind of stuff. That's scary. But to me... you know, we have not solved that problem.
But the job front, you keep going back to it. Your concerns, how do we as a society cope with AI and what it'll mean in terms of the kind of jobs we've all had or taken for granted, how those change? I will tell you, I tell my daughters, try and be in work that is people-facing, that at least in our lifetimes and theirs, still needs that human component. Because if it's a job, and I've had financial advisors tell me this, so Michael, the truth is, a lot of us are worried. Anything that a computer can sit and crunch the numbers on. So how do you find that human-facing work that still gives you a niche? Are you shaking your head? Do you agree that in the next 10, 15, 20 years, that's our real challenge?
It seems like a very, very real
possibility. Maybe not just 10 years.
And with exponential growth, I mean, we've seen that.
But to Brian's point, then how do we as a society, we know what's in front of us. How,
well, you know what's interesting about this,
how
too,
do we cope?
We're really trying to figure that. This is really new frontier type stuff, you know, good and bad. And I'll explain that. But what's interesting about this is, you know, with prior major changes in the economy, it's really attacked blue collar workers. You know, we automated certain things, you know, the industrial age, you know, and farming has, you know, dropped a lot of jobs and things like that. This is really all about, if you look at what AI is replacing, it's almost 90% white collar jobs, right? So who's more secure? The accountant? Now, imagine if I can upload my W-2 and all my receipts and fill out my form and just upload, you know, scan it in and tell the AI program, go find what you need to find, ask me questions, and do my return. Who could do a better job? A CPA with 20 years of training or AI who's got the expertise of thousands of CPAs? You know, who's going to do better? But if I need a plumber to fix my broken pipe, who's got more job security? You know, so they're saying that it's the white-collar jobs that are in the biggest threat.
Mm-hmm. There's all J.D. Vance. Recently said the Vice President J.D. Vance described the development of artificial intelligence as an arms race with China. Do you see it in those kind of drastic terms about winning the, quote, arms race between us and China dictates where we are in the next 5, 10, 15? put some meat on the bone there. How are you concerned?
So I look at things. I'm a very analytical guy, big surprise, you know, in the world I'm in. And, you know, I can almost plot, you know, the growth and the slopes of curves. So US has done very well. We're ahead, you know, in a lot of areas. You know, I mean, we have ChatGPT. What does everybody talk about? You know, and our growth is going pretty solid. 20 years ago, China was dramatically behind everybody in technology. Their slope is like this. So, and they know they are investing, you know, crazy money in chips, in tech, software programming, in education, all designed to leapfrog in this area. And, you know, we got blindsided in AI. For example, DeepSeek, when their AI came out of the blue, nobody saw it on their radar. And it, in a lot of the metrics, it beat everybody and was a fraction of the cost to run it and to use it. Now, there's arguments that they may have been cheating in some ways or certain things that are going, there's more controversy to that. But out of the blue, if they get ahead on this, you know, and we're going to look like the third world country and they're going to look like the primary world leaders, we can't let that happen. This is a major, major thing going on right now. We can't let that happen.
I think I'll just go hide out.
But there's a lot of good things.
Tell us a little more of the good things.
Yeah, let's go through the
good
things.
I will tell you, if I'm listening or watching this and seeing the expression on my face, at least, perhaps Brian's, you're like, holy cow. Kind of bring it home a little bit. The good things we should look forward to and the things we all need to be having big discussions about.
All right, so I'm going to nerd out on you for a little bit, and this is going to be right up your alley. In the Star Trek world, ready for this? In the Star Trek world, there is no worry about income. You know, you can do what you want. If you want to become an artist and you want to go do whatever and wander the world, you don't have to worry about, you know, being poor and homeless, okay? You know, all your medical needs are taken care of. You know, you have the latest technology. People live for, you know, in a much greater extended period. All right, so we have a chance of all that happening. People don't have to work. Your medical is all, you know, diseases are cured. People are living for 300 years,
and
whatever.
You do see frontiers of medical research being pushed back rapidly.
I see major things. There's people out there now. It sounds crazy. People are out there saying now that people are going to, you know, within our generation could live to 200 years old. To me, that sounds ridiculous. But these are experts in their fields who are saying, like, look, this is, we're having, you know, some
major. That sounds hypey to me.
It does sound hypey to me. But, you know, at the same time. So now imagine whether it's, like you said, 10 years, 15 years, whatever the magic number is. These things start happening. People don't have to work. You know, the world's a better place, all these great things, better technology, better robots. You have a housekeeper that does all your work for you, whatever they are, all these great things. But they come with a set of problems with that because, like you said, yes, I don't have to work. I have a housekeeper. I have computers that take care of everything for me. My life is luxurious. But then how do we deal with the income, universal basic income, and not having a job and our purpose in life and whatnot? Now, this may be far down the road, so there's a lot of major benefits, but we have to figure out this new world. You know, if it comes to this.
Well, it's like that 25-year-old couple. In the future, when we live to be 200, they get married, and they're going to live together for another 175 years.
That's a great point.
That could be a real stress on a marriage.
That's a good point.
Happy 175th. In the near term, what's your best advice to people? We hear AI every minute of the day. And we're all intrigued by it, a little bit scared by it, see the promise of it. I see it with my elderly parents. What if there's an AI-infused robot that can help with their elder care, keep an eye on them? And what if it can help my children with their health care or help them come up with better ideas for that human-facing work? I mean, you see those possibilities, but we're going to have to be very careful how we manage it and play with it and use it.
Well, another downside to that, too, is your parents could get a phone call from you. And it's not you, but it sounds like you,
exactly.
It responds like you, and, you know, that's becoming an issue already.
So how do we put a moat around it, to Brian's great point, to feel like that we're using it and it's not using us? And I think it's probably not an easy, glib answer to that.
Well, no.
Even as I ask it, I think that's a tough challenge.
And do we want to? And bear with me. If we start restricting and making rules and laws and whatever, which could all be good things, is China going to do that? Are other countries, is Russia going to do that? Whoever else is investing, you know, in this heavily? Do we want to suddenly be dramatically behind the others who aren't doing certain things? But yes, we have to have safety. We have to have all these other things. But there's a consequence. You know, can we put the toothpaste back in the tube? You know, so.
What's your message to people listening and watching? You say, what will it mean to me? What should I think about going forward?
This is what I like. So what I am out there evangelizing, for lack of a better word, and what I find people starving for, is what do I do? How do I use this? Whatever. And it is exciting. It is fun. In fact, most of the feedback I get is positive. People are excited. Like, people who I thought would never touch a computer or who thought this was rubbish are like, oh my gosh, have you seen, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Crazy, shocking me with creative things. Random people who I would never consider even a computer user are coming to me doing these things. I'm like, what made you think of that? And they're like hooked on it. So it is bringing a lot of good things to it. But as far as what people out there watching is, you don't want to wait 5 years to get the basics of this, okay? One, make it fun, but play with it. This is the infant stage. That's probably even too immature of a term to use. It is less than an infant stage. Learning it now, for lack of a better word, is easy. Right now, there's not a lot to learn, to keep up with, and catch up with. You don't have to be an expert. But pay attention to what's new every few months. You try to use it every day. Most of that is habit. I find people who like never even occurred, I'm like, oh, I should ask ChatGPT that. I should ask Gemini that. I should. If you start every day thinking, I got this problem, or I want to know some information, or I want to organize something, you get in the habit of using it every day. Eventually, you start using it 5-10 times a day, but it makes you better. You know, follow some simple blogs and stories online, like this podcast, you know, watching this. There's some great ones on Instagram and Facebook page that have literally 30-second updates, what's new in AI this week, you know, just be aware. When I started, you know, IT, I am now considered a cybersecurity expert at all these advanced topics like that. If I had to step in now, I don't know that I could do it. But I started back, like I said, in DOS, when I had a menu. Hit A for your word processor, B for your spreadsheet.
Laughing because we both remember DOS.
Yes. You know, and at the time, like, oh, you're a wizard, you know. No. But that I learned, and I just kept adding little layers to the onion, you know, or to the pearl, or however you want to look at that. Now I've got this big thing. That's today with AI. So anybody out there watching that, play, experiment, learn, ask AI, hey, what's new with you in the last 3 months that I might not know about? It shocks me when I ask that question now. Hey, did you know about this feature or that feature? That's great.
Learn how to adapt it to your needs.
Yes.
And to harness it for your creativities. I think what I'm hearing there. Stay ahead of it and see how you can harness it to what you're doing.
Play around with it. Look what other people are doing. One of my favorite things as an IT expert is, and I'm blown away with this, I'll read on the groups what other people are doing that never even occurred to me. Simple things that are life-changing that I will see in there that just, I never even occurred to me to ask this, you know?
Well, it occurs to me at this point to say thank you to Alan Krowitz, President and CEO of InfoStream, giving us an interesting, provocative, somewhat scary view of AI and the fact that we can't bury our heads in the sand. We have to be aware of its promises, its challenges. One thing we're not replacing anytime soon, though, is the human wisdom of my friend Brian Crowley with what we have always called the Crowley Closer. And on that note, my human friend,
I have a way for you to confuse your children. All you have to do is say to them, ask them this question. What is a floppy disk? Which reminds me that, you know, Florida introduced the first IBM personal computer in 1981. And where was that? In Boca Raton, Florida, where they used to have a massive campus. And I believe the IBM 1981 had a floppy disk.
We're dating ourselves a little bit.
I remember on Gateway Boulevard. I remember it.
He still uses MySpace.
That's right. What? You're not supposed to do that?
I thought I was hearing on that. Huh? Oh, okay.
When Alan sees me waving the white flag, he'll rescue me from AI. Alan Krowitz, you've always, for many years, it's fascinating to hear you talk, and it's something we all have to pay a lot of attention to. I am a little past floppy disk. Barely. I'm getting there. Alan, thanks for being here.
I appreciate
it very much. So much. And always, my friend, great to have you aboard. It is fun. It's exciting. It's all of those things and more. And we really appreciate all of you joining us on this edition of Top of Mind Florida.